Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today I want to talk about the fascinating subject of mysticism, and there's many shows we've had on World Spirituality over the years that have focused in general on that subject. And of course, it's the mystical tradition that is so much a part of Unity thinking. But this show particularly wants to focus on the subject of mysticism itself, whatever it is, and how we can learn from it. And many wonderful books, of course, have been written on the subject over the centuries, from the classic book by William James, Varieties of Religious Experience, to Evelyn and the Hills' pioneering work. And today I want to focus on a particular favorite of mine. It was given to me by a friend who worked for Penguin Books back in the 70s, and he used to bring home piles of copies of books for us to look at. And one of them that really spoke to me was called Mysticism, A Study and an Anthology by the wonderful writer F.C. Happold. And this was, like I say, published by Penguin Books. And what's great about it is it forms a complete whole, because it's got an anthology of some of the great mystics of the planet. It's certainly not exhaustive, but it's got a good selection. And then at the beginning is a study of what mysticism is. And F.C. Happold, interesting man. He was born in 1893, died in 1971, educated at Cambridge University. He served in the First World War, and in fact was a war hero. He was given the Distinguished Service Order. And then went into school teaching and was the headmaster of Bishop Wordsworth's school in Salisbury in Wiltshire, in a beautiful part of southern England. Some of you may have visited Salisbury Cathedral, one of the great cathedrals. But he was headmaster there from 1928 to 1960, and wrote many books on education and history and social studies, as well as religion and philosophy, and set up many initiatives educationally and did wonderful work. But I know him particularly from his book Mysticism, A Study and an Anthology, which is part of a trilogy that he wrote on prayer and spirituality. So the question is, what is mysticism? You know, for those of us coming from a pragmatic or empirical point of view, a secular viewpoint, it's kind of mumbo-jumbo, isn't it? You know, mysticism, oh, that's mystical. It's almost dismissed, just like we dismiss myths. Oh, that's just a myth. Whereas, in fact, myths can be very potent symbolic stories of universal truths. And mysticism is far from mumbo-jumbo. It is a way to penetrate into the truth of something and have a direct experience. So if I had to sum up mysticism, in a couple of words, that's what I would say, that it is direct experience of truth. Certainly not mystical in the sense of esoteric or abstruse. It's very real. It's available to all of us. And in fact, I would suggest that we are all mystics in some degree. We all have the ability to have a direct experience of reality. And I don't say God necessarily, because once we start using terms like God, we're back into our intellectual minds. You know, we have concepts around what God means. And mysticism is an avoidance of concepts, and it's a direct experience of what is at any given time. And of course, that can change, can't it, as we unfold. So our mystical understanding, our direct experience unfolds. But one thing's for sure is that it's a perennial philosophy, and many writers have talked about that idea of perennial philosophy. And of course, the famous book by Aldous Huxley entitled The Perennial Philosophy was an anthology of mystics and other writers who pointed towards this truth that keeps pushing out its wisdom throughout all traditions and all through all history, and hence it's perennial. You know, it's always available, and it seems to be the ground base, if you like, that permeates every other way of thinking. And we see it in all religions. There's the mystical side to Islam, the Sufis, mystical side to Christianity, and all the great mystics of the Catholic and Protestant traditions, mysticism in Buddhism and Hinduism, certainly, and in the Tao. So we see it pushing forth in many, many ways, but it comes as that direct perception, as I said. And there's a wonderful quote in the book on page 39 about the timeless moment that happened for Blaise Pascal, the great French writer. And after he had this mystical experience, he wrote down what he felt, and then he put that little piece of writing, sewed it into his coat, and I think they found it in there after he died. But it was so powerful and so meaningful to him that they actually carried it around on his person for the rest of his life. And this is the quote of what he experienced. He says, from about 10:30 in the evening to about half an hour after midnight, fire. God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob, not the God of philosophers and scholars, absolute certainty, beyond reason, joy, peace, forgetfulness of the world and everything but God. The world has not known thee, but I have known thee. Joy, 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 tears of joy. Those are beautiful words, aren't they? Very powerful, as I said, direct to the point. So for what, just a couple of hours there in the evening, that sense of fire, that sense of something moving within him, and the gods of his childhood tradition of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob became real to him. And not the God of philosophers and scholars, not intellectualizing, but absolute certainty. And I think this is one quality of the mystical experience, is that it's a sense of I know it to be true, beyond reason, joy and peace. So it's that peace that only the spiritual dimension can provide for us, right? Beyond trying to work it out, beyond reason, forgetfulness of the world and everything but God. In other words, everything in its right place. We're no longer distracted by the world. The world has not known thee, because it's so taken up with itself. But I have known thee. There's that sense of penetration, going beyond, breaking through into this joyous place. Joy, 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 tears of joy. And I think all of us at some point in our lives, and maybe not to the dramatic, in the dramatic way that Blaise Pascal received it, but I think we've all had those inklings that there's this divine order and joy and love within everything, even in the most difficult of times. And it's those moments that have impelled us forward. Maybe it's those moments that have brought us into unity, if we are unity students, or brought us into a sense that It's not just about religion. It's about spirituality. We're spiritual but not religious, as the cliche goes. I think there's many ways to approach this, isn't there? There's not just one way of having this happen to us. Often it can happen without us thinking about it. You know, when we're least expecting it, later in the evening on an ordinary night in his own room, it happened for him. But I think it can happen through love, kind of devotion to God, or devotion to another person. It can happen through knowledge, through study. It can happen in nature. It can happen by being kind and acting in a selfless way. It can come in contemplation or systematic study, as in Raja Yoga in the East. So it can come in many forms. It can come mending your motorcycle, as the art of motorcycle maintenance, Zen and the art of motorcycle maintenance, where he found the quality there within doing something that took him outside of his thinking into a direct experience with his beingness, and with his bike becoming almost like a vehicle to travel down the road, but to take him into an inner dimension. So I think it can happen. It can happen in any way. But the thing is, we just have to be open to it, because it's so easy to miss it if we're distracted by the world. Apple talks about seven characteristics of mystical states, and I've always loved those seven, and there may be more. And I think William James talks about some of these too in his book. But these are Happold's seven. First of all, it's ineffable. I love that word. I'm not quite sure exactly what it means. And that's part of it, isn't it? It's ineffable. You can't define it. And that's a characteristic of mystical state. You can't put your finger on it. If you could, it wouldn't be it. It's like love. You can't define it. You can only experience it. So it has an ineffable quality. It's like smoke. It slips through your fingers, and yet it does its magic. It fills the air with magic. So that's the first characteristic. I think it's ineffable, cannot be tied down. It's out of the box. The second thing is, it brings a certain knowledge, not head knowledge, but deep knowing. When we're in a mystical state, and when we've had an experience of breakthrough, we tend to know something. We have a deep sense of certainty, like Blaise Pascal experienced, that sense of, yeah, oh yeah, now I know, now I understand, and everything falls into place in divine order. Third characteristic is transient. It only lasts for a few seconds. Maybe a minute or 2 hours for him, in his case, but that's about it, isn't it? And it's gone. And we're back into ordinary, so-called ordinary reality. And yet we bring something back from that experience that's not transient. You know, and by the way, if you've ever had one of these moments, even though it's gone on just for a few seconds, it seems to be eternal, doesn't it, while it's happening? And that's another characteristic, I think, of a mystical state. It's temporary, and yet it seems timeless. So that's another characteristic, the timelessness of it. We transcend time and space, and we're into what Meister Eckhart called the isness of a thing, the beingness, I guess. It just is what it is, timelessly, endlessly, always happening. A little bit like the event horizon in the black hole. It's always there. It's a timeless moment. So that's the fourth one. The fifth one is there's a sense of certain sense of passivity. Not like we're not doing anything and giving up. Not the resignation, but we're passively receiving. Everything's on hold, and we're very open and receptive to receiving this higher information. So we don't have to do it of our own volition. You know, after we've experienced this, we just, as Jesus said, not I, but the Father within me that does the works. I can't do anything. I'm a passive receiver of this energy. So I think that's another quality that comes to us, a sort of a radical amazement that we're in this place, in this space of awareness. Six, sense of oneness with everything, or the idea that everything is one. And I know Charles and Myrtle Fillmore experienced that, and why they named their movement Unity. It came to them in prayer, but I think it was a perfect name, because when we're in this state, we recognize that all is one, that we're one with God and one with each other, and there's only one of us here. There's no sense of separation anymore. So there's that sense of everything's interconnected. Even those people that we despise are actually one with us. And there's a beauty in that. We become much more compassionate as a result of connecting to that oneness. And then finally, linked to the oneness concept, I think, is the oneness realization, is this idea that ego's not real, that who I thought I was maybe isn't quite the truth, that I'm not as important as I think I am, and that it's okay not to be me. Not that we lose ourselves, but we're still us. In fact, we're better us is now, because we're no longer conditioned by having to be us all the time. And so we could be more effective. So that's another wonderful characteristic. I think the Dalai Lama really exhibits this quite well, because he's so natural and down to earth, and yet obviously very wise. But he realizes his ego is a servant of his spirit, of his essence, not the other way around, and that gives us a load off. It's a very pleasing and relaxed place to be, and we can be truly effective, I think, in that regard. So, how to do this? You know, Meister Eckhart said, let go, let be, and let God. And in unity, we say let go and let God. Very, very similar ideas. It's the idea of release of detachment, and we I think we don't like that word detachment, because it implies that we have to give something up, but really it's giving up our conditions, our demands, and allowing the greater beauty to shine forth that is so powerful. I think St. John of the Cross talked about detachment, and because he uses paradox, which is one of the aspects of mystical states, because it's hard to explain it other than through paradox. But he says, in order to arrive at having pleasure in everything, desire to have pleasure in nothing. In order to arrive at possessing everything, desire to possess nothing. In order to arrive at being everything, desire to be nothing. In order to arrive at knowing everything, desire to know nothing. So it's a sense of letting go of that desire of having to have it a certain way, and relaxing into what's already present in fullness. And so the more you try, the further you push something away. So letting go is the ability to truly have something. I think that works in relationships. You know, the more you want that relationship, the more you desire that person, the more tricky that relationship can become. And in fact, the person may not even want to be with you because you're so pushy. But the minute you let go and have a sort of an indifference to the situation, it seems to flow to you in a more powerful way. And I think that's a practical application of this mystical way of detachment, of letting go, and allowing something to be present rather than trying to force it. So, interestingly profound, but also very real and practical, right? Because the essence of a mystical state is that everything we could possibly need is already here. And for many years, I've loved Robert Browning's words from his long poem, Paracelsus, I think it is, and but long and boring poem. I shouldn't say that, but I had to read it in college. And it went on and on and on. But it has some wonderful lines, and the lines that I love particularly are these. It says, truth is within ourselves. It takes no rise from outward things, whatever you may believe. There is an inmost center in us all, where truth abides in fullness. And around, wall upon wall, the gross flesh hems it in, this perfect clear perception, which is truth. A baffling and perverting carnal mesh binds it and makes all error. And to know rather consists in opening out a way whence the imprisoned splendor may escape than in effecting entry for a light supposed to be without. And of course, most of Christianity and many religions as well focus on this, trying to allow the light that's outside to come into us. Please fill me with, help me be less my horrible fleshly self and more filled with spirit. And this is the opposite, isn't it? It's letting out the light that's already there and stopping identifying ourselves with the lesser and embracing the higher, the more magnificent that's already present for us. Rather consists in opening out a way whence the imprisoned splendor may escape to the inmost center in us all, where truth abides in fullness. Let's contemplate that for a second. The imprisoned splendor within you and within me right now. This inmost center in us all, where truth abides in fullness. We talk a lot about the silence in unity, which is that contemplative place where we find that fullness, that inmost center in us all. I like to call it the still point. It can only happen now, in the present moment. And in that moment, we realize that we are fragile, limited human beings. We also eternal, divine, limitless beings of spirit and power. And when we come together, it's the co-inherence of spirit and matter, right? We become one. Like Jesus was fully God and fully man, we are too. We are both together. And it's in that moment that we realize how precious life is and how safe life is too at the same time. And it's one of those paradoxes again, isn't it? But it's the mystical experience of being fully alive in this moment, in this body. Happold describes a mysticism in his study in the first 100 or so pages of the book. But then he goes into this wonderful anthology of the great mystics. But before he gets to the great mystics, he has a number of quotes in his prologue to the anthology from regular folks. And one of them I've always liked, and it's a recollections of a woman named Margaret Isherwood, talking about the experience she had when she was a girl of 9. And I love it because it's described as so beautifully. Let me read it. It says, suddenly the thing happened. And as everybody knows, it cannot be described in words. The Bible phrase, I saw the heavens open, seemed as good as any, if not taken literally. I remember saying to myself in awe and rapture, so it's like this. Now I know what heaven is like. Now I know what they mean in church. The words of the 23rd Psalm came into my head, and I began repeating them. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. Soon it faded, and I was alone in the meadow with the baby and the brook and the sweet-smelling lime trees. But though it passed, and only the earthly beauty remained, I was filled with great gladness. I had seen the far distances. Ooh, just gives me chills. I've read that many, many times over the years. But she describes this as the thing with a capital T, because you can't put a name to it. You know, suddenly this experience happened, right? Suddenly the thing happened. It cannot be described in words. The heavens seemed to open. And that's a cliche, but it's as good as any she could come up with at that time. And then it passed, and that was transitory. Like we said earlier, some of the characteristics of the spiritual path, the mystical path. Soon it faded, and I was alone in the meadow with the baby and the brook of the sweet-smelling lime trees. I'm presuming her sister or brother, and a meadow in the afternoon where they'd gone for a picnic or whatever. But although it passed, and only the earthly beauty remained. And of course, that's enough often, isn't it? I was filled with great gladness. I had seen the far distances. And I love that phrase, the far distances. We've seen beyond the limitations of the senses and our human recognition of what is reality. And we've seen into something, we penetrated into something more deep and profound, and yet really ordinary too, because it's all around us, it's within us. So, folks, we're talking about mysticism, what it is, what it isn't, because we can't describe it. We can only experience it, actually. But it's that direct experience of the truth of all things. And I'm a firm believer that you could find this anywhere, that you don't have to go to the most beautiful place in the world. You don't have to climb to the Himalayas or go to Yosemite, into some exceptional state. I think you can find it if you truly look all around you in the most ordinary places. Sometimes you can have it in that moment of connectedness with someone you love. Sometimes you can find it in a pile of rubble on the side of the street. For some reason, that becomes very meaningful, or a corner, or a snatch of music that you hear that reminds you of how beautiful everything is. So it can happen anywhere at any given time, and I think that's the key. It's not about making it all perfect or finding the right time and the right place. It's about being open and receptive to what's all around us. Because, you know, if we are one with God, one with everything, everything is imbued, isn't it, with that same wonder, that same spirit. So let's take a break, listen to these messages from Unity. And when we come back, we'll talk some more, and we'll quote some more from the great mystics of the ages, and see what we can make of some of their teachings. Thanks for listening. And tune in to my show every Tuesday at 1 Central. And also check out my my website, my personal website, pauljohnroach.com. But you can look at the Facebook page for World Spirituality. And I'm always happy to receive calls or emails. You can email me at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. And let's go get into a dialogue together about some of these fascinating subjects. And thanks for listening to World Spirituality. Be back in a couple of minutes.
Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one. Please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
If you've ever wondered how a specific Bible verse might be interpreted metaphysically, then Interpret This is for you. In Interpret This, Unity Minister Reverend Ed Townley answers your questions about the Bible and how to apply its verses to your life with passion, depth, and spiritual insight. To submit a question or to enjoy any of his numerous metaphysical interpretations, visit unity.org and click on the Interpret This box.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours, and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show, and I'm talking about mysticism. I'm basing my thinking around a wonderful book by F.C. Happold entitled Mysticism, A Study and an Anthology. I'm not even sure this is still available. It probably is somewhere or other, but it was originally published by Penguin Books. And I remember first reading it when I was early on the spiritual path in the early to mid 70s, before I went to India for the first time. And it became a fascinating study for me and really influenced a lot of my understanding of truth. In fact, I think I recognized a lot of what I'd already experienced in my life in the book. And so it was a confirmation of some of my own mystical experiences that I'd had, and codified them in a way that made sense, you know, that it wasn't just me being weird. And I think many of us have felt this, right, when we come to unity or we come to other churches that have a more spiritual bent to them, and we realize, oh yeah, there's other people that think this way, you know, that there are folks exploring the same mystical paths, and that's quite fascinating. Last week I had Matthew Fox on the show. Always a pleasure to have Matthew, and he's one of the great mystics, of course, of the 20th and 21st century, and has done so much to bring the cosmic Christ and the creation spirituality into the forefront, and to write eloquently about it in a way that makes sense of these direct experiences of truth that that we can have. I've got a frog in my throat. I'm going to cough again, folks, so excuse me. All right, thanks for bearing with me there. And let's look at some of the quotes that Happold has from various traditions and various times in history. The first one is from the Upanishads, and this is from the Mandukya Upanishad, probably written 2,500 years ago at least. And some of the greatest writings on spirituality, I think they've sometimes been called the Himalayas of the soul, the Upanishads, and just wonderful stuff. But this one says, "There is nothing that is not spirit. The personal self is the impersonal spirit. The self is the lord of all, inhabitant of the hearts of all. He is the source of all, creator and dissolver of beings. There is nothing he does not know. He is not knowable by perception, turned inward or outward, nor by both combined. He is neither that which is known, nor that which is not known. Nor is he the sum of all that might be known. He cannot be seen, grasped, bargained with. He is undefinable, unthinkable, indescribable. The only proof of his existence is union with him. The world disappears in him. He is the peaceful, the good, the one without a second." And, you know, the first part's a little scary, isn't it? You know, we can't be known. Well, you know, why am I bothering then? You know, if I can't even ever experience it. But then the Upanishads comes home with a wonderful statement. The only proof of his existence is union with him. And so you can't know him as if you were here and he was there. It was a being that could be understood. It's not a being that can be understood. It is beingness itself. So only when you become one with it can you understand it. It's like love, you know, and somebody can explain love to you forever. But until you have direct experience of it yourself, you don't know what it is. And when you do experience it, though, you know what it is. It's there. It's palpable. It's real. Yeah, I know what love is. I've touched it. I've felt it. Because I am in union with it. Yes, and that's the only proof of his existence that's necessary, is union with him. The world disappears in him. He is the peaceful, the good, the one without a second. So we just disappear, not in the sense that it's gone, but in the sense that It's no longer quite as important as we thought it was. I am in the world, but I am not of the world. Right? There's a difference, isn't there? I'm no longer conditioned. I am free. And Jesus said, you know, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Beautiful. One of the great teachings of mysticism, you know, there's the positive way, the way of awe and wonder and praising God's creation. But then there's the divine dark, you know, the seeming negative way, the way of letting go, of release, of finding God in the darkness of things. And that's a different path, you know. Behind the blazing light of the sun is the dark sun, is the emptiness, and it's out of the emptiness that comes forth the fullness. So in a sense, the dark is not frightening. The dark is the matrix out of which everything flows. And the great mystic named Dionysius the Areopagite, and I think he's actually a better name for him would be Pseudo-Dionysius, because Dionysius was a Roman, and the Pseudo-Dionysius used his name, you know, like we often use names of famous people so that people will pay attention to our quotes. We even see it today where quotes are attributed to Mother Teresa or other luminaries, but they're actually written by somebody else. But because we name the luminary, we listen to the quote more intently. And same with this, he wasn't really Dionysius, but they call him the pseudo-Dionysius, but wrote some very wonderful texts on mystical theology. And here's what he says in terms of the darkness. And see what you think. We pray that we may come unto this darkness, which is beyond light, and without seeing and without knowing, to see and to know that which is above vision and knowledge, and through the realization that by not seeing and by unknowing, we attain to true vision and knowledge, and thus praise superessentially him who is superessential by the abstraction of the essence of all things, even as those who, carving a statue out of marble, abstract or remove all the surrounding material, hinders the vision which the marble conceals, and by that abstraction bring to light the hidden beauty. Interesting. So letting go of the extraneous and going to the heart of matters, right? Even to give up the idea that you have to know something, and instead you are one with the knowing, and the knower and the known are one, and that happens in sort of radical letting go into the apparent darkness. And if you think about it, any creation happens in this way. You know, even if it's a piece of poetry, or it's a great invention, the testimony of the inventors and the poets is that. Before something's written on the page, before the discovery happens, there's that sense of just release and letting go into the unknowing. I think this happened for Einstein, that he had no clue that he was about to come up with a theory of relativity, but it all came to him out of the blue, if you like, out of the unknown. And I think many people have experienced that same thing. So creativity comes from a deep source within us, which is the divine dark, the emptiness. You can't have a cup of coffee in the morning, can you, if your cup's not empty? You know, it's not going to be useful if it's full with something else. So it's only useful when it's empty, and you can pour coffee into that emptiness. And in the same way, God will pour good into your open and receptive consciousness, yeah? So keep your cups empty, folks. Next one I want to talk about is from the Eastern Orthodox tradition, and this is actually written by St. Simon the New Theologian, which is a cool name, isn't it? Would you like to be called that? Hi, I'm St. Simon the New Theologian. Oh, cool. Anyway, he's telling the story of a young man named George, and the tradition, of course, in Eastern Orthodox spirituality was often to repeat almost like a mantra the Jesus prayer, which is God, or Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy upon me, a sinner. And it says, once upon a time, this young man was praying and saying secretly in his heart, God, have mercy on me, a sinner, when a single divine ray shone right down on him, and the room was full of light. And the young man, the blessed young man, George, I mean, he stayed there in ecstasy. He forgot his individual self and found no walls around or roof over his head, because he saw light on every side, just as if he were out of doors. And he received no sense impressions, not even of standing on the ground. He was rather walking on air. He had no bodily cares or concerns of this world on his mind, but forgot the world and was wholly dissolved to become one with the divine light, so that it seemed to him that he was the light. He was filled with tears of joy unspeakable, just like Blaise Pascal. After this, his mind went up to the heavenly places, and there he saw a fuller and a brighter light. And looking into this, it seemed to him that the elder was standing, who gave him the little book by St. Mark the Hermit, and his own rule of life. And so it was in truth that love and the desire he had for God took him out of the world in the spirit, and he forgot the world and the flesh and all the vain business of this life, and was translated wholly into God. And yet he lived in a city and had business in government affairs, and was steward in the house of a great ruler with many slaves and servants discharging important duties there. I love that ending because, you know, you get this great mystical experience, right? Taken up into the highest heaven, given this information that helped made him forget the world and all the vain business. And yet there he was still doing his work in the world, right? In the world, but not of the world. He'd seen something greater. And so he was able to do his work in a more detached, generous, released way. And I think that's what we're all aiming for, isn't it? Is to do our work without being overly attached to results, without getting weighed down with things going well or going badly, and simply remembering that it's all part of the play. It's all part of the joy of being alive, right? And then we can work effectively. Don't get so tired, you know, because we're not loading ourselves down. And we find our ability to be present to others is more powerful. We're more available. And so those are some of the hallmarks, I think, of a true spiritual life, is that we're connected to that lightness of being. That's very beautiful. All right, my favorite mystic of all time is Meister Eckhart. And Meister Eckhart was a Dominican friar, lived most of his life in Germany, and what's now Germany, and probably around the 13th century. He was condemned by the Pope and by the Catholic Church, but he died, I think, a week before his condemnation, because who knows what they would have done to him if he was still alive. But what they did was bury his teachings and his wonderful mystical truths for hundreds of years. And only in recent times have his works been translated from the German and the Latin, and he's been given his due. And, you know, people like Matthew Fox and Thomas Burton have really lifted up Meister Eckhart as one of the great mystics, and others have written books about him. Rudolf Otto wrote a book, Mysticism East and West, where he compares Eckhart to the Indian mystic Shankara, and D.T. Suzuki, the great Zen Buddhist, also wrote on Eckhart as a Buddhist himself. You know, if you're a Buddhist, you see Eckhart as Buddhist. If you're a Hindu, you see Eckhart as Hindu. If you're Christian, you see him as a mystical Christian, because he penetrates into that universalist understanding. But there's a lovely quote from Eckhart. It's kind of deep, but I like it because I like to be deep, I guess. But it makes sense to me. And you know, don't try and think it through, because if we try and think things through, we say, oh, my God, this is way too abstruse. You know, we're going too deep today, Paul. But if we try and understand it from that level, it might not work. But if we let our deep inner perceptions get going, we can understand it, I think. So here it goes. When I came out from God, that is, into multiplicity, then all proclaimed there is a God, i.e. the personal God, creator of all things. Now, this cannot make me blessed, for hereby I realize myself as creature. But in the breaking through, i.e. through all limitations, I am more than all creatures. I am neither God nor creature. I am that which I was and shall remain forevermore. There I receive a thrust which carries me above all angels. By this sudden touch, I am become so rich that God, i.e. the Creator God, as opposed to Godhead, is not sufficient for me, so far as he is only God and in all his divine works. For in this breaking through, I perceive what God and I are in common, that there I am what I was. There I neither increase nor decrease. For there I am the immovable which moves all things. Here man has won again what he is eternally, i.e. in his essential being, and ever shall be. Here God, i.e. the Godhead, is received into the soul. So, okay, you know, I know we use terms like God and Godhead. I think God is the Creator God, is that concept of God. The Godhead is that unknowable essence of creativity that is the source of the universe and everything that happens. And so once we say there is a God, we've separated ourselves, we become the creature. But when we understand that we are what we are without labels, then we are one with this God, this true God, and we are free. And we free God as well, because otherwise we're limiting God to our perception of what God is. You know, they often say we create God in our own image rather than God creating us in his. And so we have to free ourselves of that. It's the similar idea to the mystical teaching, if you see Buddha on the road, kill him. Because it's the idea that the Buddha is within us and within everything. You know, if you see him out there and think it's out there, something to be found, then that's not true. And so you must kill that idea. You must kill that concept of separation so you can return to the one. So I think this is very profound, isn't it? And beautiful, actually. It resonates for me, at least. If we want something a little more warm and fuzzy, how about Julian of Norwich? You know, Julian was a woman. She was an anchoress. She lived in the Middle Ages in Norwich, near Norwich in England, and wrote her Revelations of Divine Love. And I want to read a part of them. Some of the revelations she had around a hazelnut, actually. And this is beautiful because it can happen in such a simple way. It says, in this endeavor, God showed me a little thing, the quantity of a hazelnut in the palm of my hand, and it was as round as a ball. I looked thereupon with eye of my understanding and thought, what may this be? And it was answered generally thus, it is all that is made. I marveled how it might last, for methought it might suddenly have fallen to naught for littleness. And I was answered in my understanding, it lasteth and shall last, for that God loveth it. And so all thing hath the being by the love of God. In this little thing I saw three properties. The first is that God made it. The second, that God loves it. The third, that God keeps it. And what is to me verily the maker, the keeper, and the lover, I cannot tell. But till I am substantially one to him, I may never have full rest nor very bliss. That is to say, till I be so fastened to him that there is right naught that is made betwixt my God and me. So it's the idea that in the simplicity of that hazelnut, she saw that it was everything. It was eternal. It may be a transient thing, but it was at the same time eternal. That it was created and kept and preserved and loved by God. And just as the hazelnut is, so we are. So we are in that sense one with the Creator, and God loves it eternally, right? So it transcending time and space into that moment of recognition. Again, it's like looking into some dust and seeing the divine within the seemingly ordinary. All right, the final thing, Thomas Traherne. Thomas Traherne was a metaphysical poet writing in the 17th century, and he also wrote mystical texts. which he called centuries. And these mystical texts were lost, actually, for many hundreds of years. And I think it was the turn of the 20th century that they were found again and revealed that he was not just a wonderful poet, but he was a great mystic. And so let's conclude today on mysticism with some of my favorite words from him. And this is the earthly splendor that he's talking about. He was out in the fields or in the village, but he was seeing something much more profound than just the ordinary evidence of his senses. He writes this: "The corn was orient and immortal wheat, which never should be reaped, nor was ever sown. I thought it had stood from everlasting to everlasting. The dust and stones of the street were as precious as gold. The gates were at first the end of the world. The green trees, when I saw them first through one of the gates, transported and ravished me. Their sweetness and unusual beauty made my heart to leap. And almost mad with ecstasy, they were such strange and wonderful things. Oh, men! Oh, what venerable and reverend creatures did the aged seem, immortal cherubims! And young men, glittering and sparkling angels, and maids, strange seraphic pieces of life and beauty, boys and girls tumbling in the street and playing, were moving jewels. I knew not that they were born or should die, but all things abided eternally as they were in their proper places. Eternity was manifest in the light of the day, and something infinite behind everything appeared, which talked with my expectation and moved my desire. The city seemed to stand in Eden or to be built in heaven. The streets were mine, the temple was mine, the people were mine, their clothes and gold and silver were mine, as much as their sparkling eyes, fair skins, and ruddy faces. The skies were mine, and so were the sun and moon and stars, and all the world was mine, and I the only spectator and enjoyer of it. I knew no churlish proprieties, no bounds nor divisions, but all proprieties and divisions were mine, all treasures and the possessors of them, so that, with much ado, I was corrupted and made to learn the dirty devices of this world, which now I unlearn and become, as it were, a little child again, that I may enter into the kingdom of God." Beautifully poetic. You can tell he was a poet, can't you? Beautifully poetic lines there, even though they're written as prose. And that idea of that everything becoming just charged with light and wonder. And we don't see people in their frailty anymore. We see them as the beautiful spiritual beings that they are, from the aged to the young, from the ordinary places in that village. Everything was imbued with that glory and that light and that power. And so he unlearned, and I love that, he unlearned the dirty devices of this world. And I guess that's what mysticism is. It's saying, you know, don't have to be limited anymore by all the things that our mind has created. And because the mind creates the dirt. There is no dirt in reality, right? We create it. And we can also create the wonder through our coming back to the truth of what's really going on around you. So in these times of difficulty for our nation and our world, we remember that all is well in truth, that we have the power within us, that imprisoned splendor, to transform everything. And it can only happen with that direct perception from each of us, you know, to make connection, to break through into that truth so that we can shift our world. And it's no longer that broken place filled with the dirty devices of selfishness, but we come back to the selfless beauty that is our birthright. So hope you've enjoyed this show on mysticism. And there's a lot more I could quote. Maybe we'll do another show on the same topic, but I hope you've enjoyed it, and some of the characteristics of the mystical state, and how it's very practical. It's not mumbo jumbo. It's something we can all claim direct experience of truth today. All right, thanks for listening. Tune in next week, and hope you have a wonderful week in between. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
If I were brave, I'd walk. Where fools and dreamers dare to tread and never lose faith.
How is life working for you? Would it be okay with you if life got easier, simpler, yet more meaningful and vibrant? Join certified life coach Carla McClellan Tuesday afternoons for Vibrant Living. Each week, Coach Carla and her guests will share strategies and solutions designed to make your life more vibrant. Is there something in your life you'd like help with? A dream you'd like to achieve? A relationship you'd like to improve? Call into the show toll-free for Coaching with Carla. That's Vibrant Living, Life Coaching with Carla. Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Central on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
What if we're all meant to do what we secretly dream?
In an old Three Stooges comedy skit, Larry would call out to Mo, "I can't see, I can't see." Mo would immediately rush to Larry's aid, asking, "Why not?" Larry would then smile and say, "Because I've got my eyes closed." Then, of course, Mo would bop Larry on the head. It is a good idea to pause occasionally to think about what we may not be seeing because our eyes are closed. And preferably do this before we get bopped on the head by circumstances. Is it life that is restraining us or our own limited thinking? When we truly understand that no one can make us think or feel anything unless we give them permission, we begin to see the vastness of our freedom. Open your eyes. Recognize your power to choose how you will focus your thought. Celebrate your freedom. This law of life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Just like life, grief is a journey, not a destination. Whether it is loss of life, relationship, security, or simply the process of change, have you given yourself permission to begin your journey of grief? Have you yielded to the gift of grace? Join Reverend Chaz Wesley every Thursday at 5 p.m. Central on a virtual navigation from grief to grace, and explore new horizons of empowerment, significance, and support. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
I'll light a candle in your name.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology. Available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today